live from Packers practice at Ray Nitschke Field as they get ready for their preseason finale. Tausch will be happy to know that no setbacks for Jordan Love with his work yesterday. He is under center right now and throwing routes on air. So
hey, this is an important week for him. I mean, that's stating the obvious, but hopefully he's able to do some team stuff, and I really want to see him play on Saturday afternoon. I think it's important to see what developments we've seen from him, because he is going to be the backup quarterback, regardless of your guys' love for Benkert.
Indeed. You're right. We'll talk more about Jordan Love and about Dennis Kelly and David Bakhtiari doing their rehab work about 10 feet away from me, enjoying at least one half of Wilde and Tausch. But you know what that music means? It means it's time to be joined by our good friend. We hear from her each and every other week from Bally Sports Wisconsin and the Milwaukee Brewers. It's our friend Sophia Minner. Sophia, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Well, Tausch accused me of name dropping earlier in the show because I did an event with Christian Yelich last night. Apparently, I just name dropped again, if that's what I did, for Associated Bank. And it was a virtual from the field to the family room is what we called it. And so he sat down and took about an hour's worth of questions from fans and a couple from me. And I have to say, I have admired him from afar. I enjoy when he talks to you after a game. I also, as I mentioned to him, I've been really impressed with how he has carried himself when things have not gone the way he wanted them to. I have a lot of respect for people that are able to do that. But it was strange for me because I don't know him. Like, we did another event with Matt LaFleur, name dropping again, apparently. And obviously, I work with him every day. So I had all kinds of experience with him. I'm curious what your experiences have been with Christian, because I acknowledge to him that I'm sure it would be better if Sophia was talking to you instead of me, but you're stuck with me for tonight. So what have your experiences been like with him?
I mean, I think what you said is a pretty good summary. He is incredibly genuine, down to earth. He's very humble. I think that's what stood out to us, you know, right away. And especially in 18 and 19, when he was just playing outside of his mind, right? And he was the best player in the league. And he was still just so humble every day. Like, he didn't change, you know, even with all the craziness happening around him and hearing both stadiums chant MVP every night, and even all the off the field cool opportunities he got to do, right? Just how his life changed off the field, how visible he became, how recognized he became. He hasn't changed. And I think you probably saw that last night in your time with him, is that he's just a regular guy. You know, he likes to be low key. He doesn't like a lot of attention. He's very humble, doesn't really like talking about himself, but he's just authentic. Like, that's just kind of who he is.
Yeah, I came away very impressed. One of the things, though, that he talked about a lot, and I'm curious if he did this before he went through his injury and then his subsequent struggles last season and for portions of this season, he talked a lot about failure. And mm-hmm. there were a lot of kids that were in the virtual room for this, and I thought it was so good because he talked about how vital it is to success to deal with failure. And he kept bringing up, and we've all heard this about baseball, right? If you fail 7 out of 10 times at the plate, you're in the Hall of Fame. But he talked so much about how much of baseball is failure and the ability to cope with that and handle that and not let it affect your next at bat. And I'm wondering, is this something that you've heard him talk about even when things were going really well for him? And obviously he had a great night the other night, but it really resonated with me because I think that's one thing that, you know, whether it's my kids or kids in general or even grownups, that we probably struggle with more than that we need to improve upon is handling failure. I just thought it was really interesting, and I'm wondering if that's something you've heard from him before.
Yeah, it is. And I think we've definitely heard it more, you know, just since the injury. You know, last year was such a bizarre year. Even this year, it's been such a choppy season for him. You know, I think he came out of spring training in such a good place, and then the back injury essentially took him out for 2 months of the season. And he's just been kind of fighting to find himself ever since then. So he just really hasn't felt like himself and at the level of performance and production that he expects from himself, because I think that's the thing that you learn pretty quickly about Christian too, is like, he is extremely competitive, and he holds himself to the standard that we saw in 18 and 19. Like, in his opinion, you know, he should be that player. Like, he knows he's capable of being that player. He showed that he can be that player for an extended period of time, right? Essentially two full seasons before the knee injury. And so I think that's what kind of kept him so grounded and so humble, like, every day, really, since we've known him. You know, no matter how things were going, whether it was two homers and six RBIs, or whether it was 0-for-4 with three groundouts and a strikeout, like, I think because he knows how hard this game is. And one thing he says all the time is, like, you can put in all, you know, baseball is just funny that way. You can put in all the work. You can do hours and hours and hours of work. You still might not get the results. Just, you know, there are uncontrollables in baseball. You can hit a ball 106 miles an hour and it might be right at an infielder, an outfielder. It might, you know, bounce over the fence. Like, you just, there's so many uncontrollables in baseball. And so I think even when he was at the very top of his game at an MVP level, I think he recognized that the next day could be a very different story. You know, you could suffer a season-ending injury. It could all be over the next day. And just what you do one day doesn't necessarily need to lead to the next. So I think that concept of failure is something that in baseball specifically, you're reminded of every single day, and how quickly things can change, you know, good or bad. And just that, you know, you have to show up and do it every day. And if you put in the work, then you can live with kind of what the outcome might be.
Well, Jason, that's why you're not a Major League Baseball player. I don't think you'd, that's probably.
I don't handle failure well. No, I'm terrible at it.
That's not true. Sophia, we saw the big press conference last, I think it was on Friday, with Giannis becoming a minority owner in the Milwaukee Brewers. How long has that been in the works, and when did you kind of get wind that that was happening?
Yeah, it was a crazy day, because honestly, we didn't know anything about it. We found out about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and all we were told was show up to a press conference at 3 p.m. And there was no information about what this was regarding, who was involved, who would be attending. You know, it was kind of cryptic, actually. Normally we would get more of a heads up on that, or we'd at least know what the subject is or who the guests were going to be. But this was very much under wraps. And then when we had the chance to talk to Mark Adonasio and Giannis about it, you know, apparently these conversations started last year when the Bucks were in the bubble, and Giannis was, I think, thinking about, you know, what his life and career could look like outside of basketball. And he considered, you know, ownership in a professional team. And I think, you know, because he grew up in Greece and didn't grow up around baseball, you know, he grew up a soccer fan. You know, he initially thought, maybe I'll buy a stake in a professional team in Europe. And then he, you know, thought about it more, gave it more consideration, and decided, no, I should invest in Milwaukee, and wanted to be a part of the Brewers. So, from there, the conversations unfolded, and it's, you know, it's noteworthy not just because it's Giannis, but it's also just the first time that Mark Adonasio and his ownership group have added a new individual owner from the time that Mark purchased the team in 2005. So it was noteworthy on a couple levels. I think it's a great story. I think, you know, obviously the connection of, like, when Aaron Rodgers, you know, became a minority owner in the Milwaukee Bucks, it kind of feels like a very similar sort of thing of, like, a player investing in the community that they're in, that they're playing in, that they live in. You know, Giannis spoke at length about what Milwaukee means to him and the support that he's received. So it was a cool day, honestly. It was very cool. He seemed really excited about it. And I think it's a great thing for the team, you know, to have him attached to it too.
And Sophia, what we saw, Yelich was obviously excited. The player is just pretty stoked that Giannis is now part of the operation.
Yeah, I think they were surprised too. Like I asked Christian, even Christian said he had known nothing about it. So they had a nice FaceTime call after the press conference. Those two obviously know each other, you know, just being MVPs, and I think they can probably relate to each other and what comes with that, like in a way that only they can. So they have a pretty cool connection, and yeah, I think everyone was surprised by the news, but excited about it. You know, and it's a cool thing to have a player and person of Giannis's caliber to invest in and want to be a part of something.
Sophia, I'm told you made the fatal mistake that guests make on this show by saying that you're available for a second segment. So we have not actually talked, even we've spent 10 minutes with you. We haven't actually talked about where this team stands and where it's headed. So maybe we should do that, especially after some criticism for how little we've talked Brewers. That's where we rectify it, is when we talk to our friend Sophia Minard. And that will continue next. It's Wilde and Tausch. Continuing with Sophia Minert, I am at Packers practice where it is turning into like the Wizard of Oz when Dorothy gets sucked up by the tornado. Like this, the winds have picked up significantly. It is dark clouds above us, so I don't know what's going to happen next here at practice. They are continuing to practice, but there are some confused looks all over the sideline. So, Tausch, you have wanted to talk more Brewers, and Sophia is here to fill that void on this program while I probably have to go run for cover in a few minutes here. Holy cow. Go ahead.
Gee, you're going to be all right. All right, Sophia.
So long, Jason.
Is he like a
nice
kite?
Nice knowing you guys.
Is he like a kite blowing away? All right, Sophia, so we saw this last weekend. The Brewers just keep winning series and plugging along. What's kind of the vibe? You're 7.5 games up, getting to be September here shortly. Give us the vibe overall. Is it just status quo, continue on, keep doing what you're doing? Or give us kind of a vibe of where we're at in the clubhouse right now.
Yeah, I mean, the vibe's pretty good, obviously. And honestly, it just has been for a while. And I think, you know, it's not just that it's a good vibe because they're winning. I think it's been steady, right? Like, I think they've just continued to stack up series wins. They've kind of continued to get contributions from everybody, which has been so necessary this year, just with the volume of injuries they've had, how much the depth has been tested. You know, they've used more than 60 players this season, which is a franchise record. And we still have over a month to go, so there's going to be more people involved, I'm sure, down the stretch. But I think it's just like the consistency. And I think it starts with the starting rotation of, you know, they show up every day with the expectation that they're going to win. Like, they just, with how consistent the starting rotation has been and how that kind of sets the tone for the game and what that does for the bullpen and putting people in good positions. You know, I think offensively they feel like they can put up a big number, but with the strength of their pitching, they don't always have to put up a big number. You know, they can win a 2-1 game and they can win, you know, 22-10. Like, so I just think they show up every day with the expectation that they're going to win.
Sophia, I got a little grief from these guys it was just last week when Freddie Peralta left with the injury against the Cardinals. Because I said this is, like, in sports, no one ever says you're taking your foot off the gas. It's all gas, no bleep and break, how Matt LaFleur says it or how Tausch says it or whatever. But at this stage of the game, you build the lead in the division so that you can establish a little bit more of this built-in buffer zone, so that if a guy like Freddie Peralta or Brandon Woodruff goes down, you can skip a starter too, and you're still going to be positioned best for the postseason. Is that kind of the mentality that the team is approaching this with yet, or are they still thinking it's all gas with got to make sure you preserve the division lead at this juncture?
Yeah, I think it's too soon to be eyeing things like, you know, how are we going to set up the rotation for the postseason, right? How are we going to line up the guys, you know, for the rest of the few weeks? I think when you look at kind of how the season has unfolded, like Freddie Peralta, as you said, he's on the IL right now, but he started throwing on Sunday, like some light catch, so it's hopeful he could be a 10-day minimum. So that's kind of a built-in break, so to speak, for him, of that he's going to miss a turn, hopefully just one in the rotation. Corbin Burnes missed time when he was on the COVID-19 IL. Brandon Woodruff is really the only guy who has made every start and has not had like a turn skipped or, you know, some extended time off. Brett Anderson has been on the IL. Adrian Hauser was on the COVID-19 IL. Eric Lauer, same thing. So I think the way that they have set up the rotation specifically is that with the 6-man rotation, they've been getting built-in days of extra rest. So the cumulative effect of that is, I think we were talking to Corbin the other day, is he's maybe made 3 fewer starts than what he typically would on a 5-day rotation. They're getting extra rest in between. That's helping their recovery. That's keeping them strong. I think that's what has helped make them just so consistent at this point in the season of, you know, it's August and typically this is dog days, right? This is when Craig Counsell says, you know, starting pitchers specifically, this is when you really earn your money because you're getting to inning numbers that these guys just haven't seen at any point in their careers. So I think, you know, with baseball, it's like, yeah, I get what you're saying of like the gas and the brake, the analogy, but I think these guys, their attitude is just like show up and win games and win series. And if you just keep doing that, you're going to be where you want to be. But I don't think they're at a point yet where they're going to, you know, change anything drastically of what they've already been doing, because this has been a long-term plan for them going back to spring training.
All right, Sophia, you've been around, you know, you're still young, but you've been around a long time. You've covered a lot of these Brewers teams. Is this the best group that you've covered up to this point?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is the best group, and I say that because, I mean, again, the pitching is the best that I think the franchise has ever had collectively. When you look at, you know, the big three, the all-star aces, what they could do, you know, in a series and a postseason run. When you look at the back end of the bullpen with the consistency of Hader and Williams and Boxberger, Strickland has been fantastic since he joined the team. Jake Cousins has like come out of nowhere. And then I think offensively, this is just as skilled of a team they have. I think this is as deep of a lineup as they have. I think they're versatile. I think they're well balanced with lefties and righties. I think this is probably the most complete team that we've seen. I think, you know, the easy one to compare it to is 2018. I wasn't covering the team in 2011, but I do think this is the most complete team that we've seen.
All right, Sophia, because of the way Tausch framed that question, I have to ask this follow-up. And Tausch, you can correct me if I'm leaving something off the list. What is more rude to ask someone? Their age, their annual income, or was there a third one?
Yeah, wait.
Because he seemed a little he accuses me of backtracking from time to time. He seemed to be very cautious about pointing out that you've been covering this team for quite a while, and yet you're still young.
She's a lot younger than we are. I know that. A lot. And a lot lighter.
Okay. I think weight is probably the most rude thing because, like, I don't really know the context of that question.
Do you need it?
I'm going to go with weight.
Okay, so how old are you and what are you making this year?
Whoa, Nelly!
Well done, Jason. So Sophie, you walked into that one.
I'm 34.
Well, yeah, she would answer the question, yeah. At least one of them. Sophia, we always love it when you join us. Thank you, as always. And we look forward to more conversations with more awkward questions at the very end. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great day.